A federal court is requiring Michigan's Independent Redistricting Commission to redraw more than a dozen state House and Senate districts around Detroit. The court ruled that the commission drew those lines using race as a main factor in violation of the U.S. Constitution's 14th Amendment. The MICRC was advised to use race as a factor to avoid packing in too many Black people into districts by lawyers hired by the commission. Packing is a common tactic for political gerrymandering. The court's decision has drawn widespread praise from Republicans and from some Detroit Democrats. Among them is former state senator and current congressional candidate Adam Ollier. He tells WDET's Russ McNamara that there's a way to serve Black Detroiters that doesn't dilute their representation.
I think it's really important to kind of talk about how we got here. So on day one, when the Independent Redistricting Commission was going through this process, their voting rights experts said clearly that their goal was to draw Black districts' voting percentage to a 35% to 45%. And there's no basis for that. It was insane. And I said so at the beginning. I called Representative Sherry Gay Dagnogo, and we started organizing. And the entire time, the commission refused to listen because they were responding to their expert. And what we saw yesterday was the court said, one, that there was no basis for the experts to make that testimony, and two, that it was incredibly biased against Black voters and Black communities to do so. And that was after having seen the impact clearly in the elections. You went from 17 Black legislators in this area to less than 10. And that was meaningful in a way that you did not see across the rest of the country.
But with these maps, Democrats are able to win complete control of the state legislature for the first time in 40 years. A Republican-controlled legislature often froze Detroit out of state money. And then when drawing district lines, would gerrymander districts to ensure continued control. This year, Joe Tate of Detroit became the first Black person to ever be Speaker of the House. So with all of that in mind, is blowing up these districts now right ahead of election the best way to serve the city's residents?
Again, that is a false narrative about what happened. Black voters are the basis and the backbone of the Democratic Party and do not have to be sacrificed to have majorities, right? We have majorities all across the country and can have majorities here in Michigan by doing that. Partisan fairness was achieved in the Senate maps in Washtenaw County, in Bay County. There were no competitive seats that were created by merging the city of Detroit and Southern Oakland County, Western Wayne, or Southern Macomb County. In reality, they made Northern Macomb County Republican districts more Republican. They made Northern Oakland County districts more Republican. And they made Southern and Western Wayne districts more competitive for Republicans. This did not happen and or need to happen for partisan fairness. This was solely done illegally with the goal of cracking Black communities.
Is there concern that conservatives in the anti-gay, anti-abortion group Alliance Defending Freedom, they're working on the case because they might want the same thing, but for very different reasons?
I think it's important to say that what we saw yesterday was the court saying that when these districts are redrawn, they need to listen to Black voters and the Black community who were not listened to in this process. And so there are a lot of people who believe that they are going to be advantaged by these maps. The only people who should be listened to right now are the Black voters who did not get listened to when the maps were being drawn originally. And that is who the voice is going to have to be led by. People like Representative Sherry Gay Dagnogo, who have been talking about this and leading this effort tirelessly over the last 2 years, are going to have to be in the vanguard of what happens. And Black voters and Black community groups, Black community organizations should be given an opportunity to talk about how these maps are drawn to better represent our interests and our community.
Switching gears a little bit, why are you challenging Sri Tanadar in the 13th Congressional District?
I mean, I think it's not shifting gears at all. We're talking about having representatives who understand what this community looks like, right? Like I can see my parents' house almost from mine. I live in the neighborhood I was raised in. And when we talk about what that means, it means understanding what needs to happen, to be talking about housing affordability, because he's not, to be talking about employment and real opportunities. People are complaining about the economy, not because think the metrics aren't getting better, but because that one job that they have isn't enough to pay their bills, because they're picking up second shifts, because they're working part-time to try and manage their family. That's what people want to see out of their member of Congress when they're struggling to figure out childcare, like I have to do with my little kids, or trying to help take care of an elderly relative, like I have to do with my uncle, who is a Korean War vet. Like, people are really hurting, and Sri Tanadar is not doing anything to address it. And everywhere you go, you hear people with very serious issues, and they need a serious person to address them. And that's what Congressman Tanadar has shown unequivocally, that he is not only not able to do, but not interested in doing.
Is it because he's wealthy, or is it because he's Indian American and not African American? Is that is that playing into any of this whatsoever?
There are lots of people who are wealthy who are very good members of Congress. I mean, you hear daily as they talk about members of Congress. I don't think wealth or national origin makes a difference. It's about, are you connected to the people that you represent? Are you doing the work to represent them? And he's not. And that's what this race is about.
So what are your policy goals should you get elected?
Number one is housing, right? Housing affordability is all the things that we need to be doing. It's never been harder for people to reach the American dream, which is that house, that stable housing, right? And that could also be an apartment, a space that you can call home and raise your family, a time where you can go get one job and that be enough. Too many folks had to go on strike this year to get the kind of wage increase to ensure that they could work one job, not two jobs, not three jobs, not four jobs, which is what we see people disproportionately having to deal. We saw so many women leaving the workforce because they couldn't afford childcare. When the median cost of childcare in this state is $11,000, you're working minimum wage, making $30,000. You're not. You're just working to pay for childcare. That's the problem that we have. And you even more see, as we have an aging population who are trying to age in place, can't afford to stay in their homes because of all the maintenance issues that we're talking about, the lack of value in our community, but even more than that, the lack of affordable care options. And so we have really got to be focused on the things that matter most to people, where they're going to live, how they pay their bills, and how we take care of the people we love. And that's why I'm running.
In the primary against Tanadar last year, you were given millions from AIPAC, the powerful pro-Israel lobby that funds conservatives and pro-Israel Democrats alike. Tanadar, to that point, had been critical of Israel's policy toward Palestinians. He's since changed that rhetoric. I'm just wondering now, what is your stance on the current conflict in Gaza? Do you support a ceasefire?
I think I'm very squarely focused on the things that matter most in this district. So when we talk about what's the priority, it's housing, it's taking care of families. As we talk about the foreign policy element, I'm a captain in the United States Army, right? I'm a civil affairs officer. We should be squarely focused as a nation on taking care of civilians and helping them get out of the battle space. That's what we did in Ukraine, providing aid and opportunity to get folks out. And that's what we should be doing right now. We also have to recognize that Hamas is a terrorist group that invaded its neighbor, and that's two nations having a war. The thing that we are trying to do is make sure less civilians are killed in this process. And we should be doing everything that we can to do that. I think President Biden and Secretary Austin and the Biden administration are moving in the right direction to ensure that we get to the place that we need to be. But we cannot continue to allow this discussion to politicize people's lives. And that's what we should be focused on.
But you understand why the question would come up, I guess, because, you know, at this point, you know, here we are many weeks in, over 2 months into this conflict, and, you know, there's 20,000 dead civilians. And so that's why, you know, U.S. foreign policy, and since it's come up before, that's why I'm wondering now on whether or not you support a ceasefire, because whatever mitigation efforts to reduce civilian casualties has not worked thus far.
As a ceasefire hasn't worked to this point, there are lots of discussions about what will work or will not work in the Middle East, but it is one of the most tumultuous environments in the world. People far smarter than I have spent an entire career trying to solve this issue, whether it was President Clinton in the 90s or President Carter in the 70s. People have been trying to figure out an answer to this issue for far, far too long. What we should be focused on in the immediacy is how do we take care of civilians, which I think about how we did in Yemen when the Yemen civil war was going on. we offered refugee status. We took care of civilians in Syria. We did the same thing. That is what is not happening in the Gaza Strip. That's what we should be focused on doing. And I think as you see those shifts happening, it's going to be incumbent upon every nation in the world to try and do everything we can to allow civilians out of this space so that two nations can continue to fight the war that they are so committed to fighting.
That's former state senator and current 13th congressional district candidate Adam Ollier. He spoke with WDET's Russ McNamara.